Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Can the Republicans fight the Democrats fairly? With media constantly carrying the Democratic talking points of Trump, Trump, Trump. Forget inflation, forget violent crime, forget the masks on your kids at school in Illinois. Most other states are going maskless because all you're going to hear is Trump, Trump, Orange Man, Trump. And beyond partisan politics, the culture of Chicago is infected, and Cook County, rotting from crime and violence. Boss Tony Preckwinkle keeps getting a pass from media as Lori Lightfoot takes the heat alone. As media and other institutions fail, is there some place people can go to decode what all these candidates are jabbering about? And perhaps more importantly, what they're not jabbering about? Today, our guest is a master decoder, my good and dear friend, Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates. A good and decent, fair man. Tom is the best political analyst in the state. Yeah, the best. An analyst on Fox Chicago and co-host of the excellent Crisis Cast podcast. WGN executive producer Jeff Carlin is here, as always. Jeff didn't bring his cats. I did not bring my dog. He's outside. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And where are you with all the noise trying to distract you and spin you? Where are you with something wrong in the culture and you know it, and too few are willing to talk about the rotten parts? Or a solution that seems even equitable or achievable? You're in the No Chump Alone zone. That's where you are. You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
So, Tom, right before we began recording, you were talking about Lori Lightfoot and her dome idea.
Soldier Field one?
Yes, and putting a dome on Soldier Field. She's making an effort to try to keep the Chicago Bears in Chicago. Okay, win, lose, or draw, in the business of what she's in, that's the requirement of elected public officials, to be educators, to break the mold, and try to make the place a better place. Can that be part of that process, that effort, you know, the rally, the economic and business community, and say, hey, if we looked at this opportunity, maybe we put a cap on that dome. And it could be any kind of cap. It could be a beret. You know, because you see the way the dome is built. I mean, the stadium is built. A beret would be cool. But I don't know if you could do that in a town of architects, which, you know, when you take a look at the new PR campaign, they talk about it, you know, Chicago being the home of where architecture, skyscrapers, you know, really started. So if it could be done, it should be done, and somebody should look at it. Whether they can convince the Bears, you know, who knows? But she's thinking outside the box, which I think is good. You know, she's going to run again for re-election. She's scrappy, a tough alley fighter. And I think the more opponents in the race actually helps her, because I don't think she can pull 50%, but she certainly can pull a good number of votes in a primary to force it into a runoff. And when you get to a runoff, then it's anybody's game.
Well, she has already you know, she's had a news conference with Kim Fox. They announced charges of a criminal, alleged criminal shooting some other kid. And they were at the same news conference, which I found to be interesting. I wondered what kind of negotiations went into that whole setting up the news conference. Like, how far away do they have to stand from each other? And did they have to, you know, attach themselves to 10-foot poles so they wouldn't come near each other? But they did get through it. And
yeah. And it's, I love the idea there, John. That's like Jets and the Sharks. Is that in the back alley? Is that they're siding each other up?
Well, I was thinking, yeah, some kind of, I was thinking more of Star Trek, where they're gladiatorial games and they have poles and each fighter has is 10 feet from the other guy or 6 feet from the other guy.
Hey, there's a lot of heat, you know, on the people that make things happen and rule the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois when it comes to how people feel about the quality of life in one of the great cities on the earth, in the city of Chicago, Illinois. The quality of life is in jeopardy. I'm in a dentist chair in LaGrange 2 weeks ago. The dentist tells me, I've been going to this dentist for 20 years. He tells me about his friend downtown who's driving around in his convertible. And it was one of those warm, you know, December days before all the harsh winter hit us in January and February. And a cop pulled him over. Said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm just trying out my new convertible." He says, "Put the top up and get out of here. You're going to get hijacked." I mean, that was right near Grand Park.
Right.
He's telling me this in a chair in LaGrange. So what do you think? I think if I'm a LaGrange, you know, patient, am I going to go downtown?
No.
And then the little girl that's the person that's the hygienist who cleans your teeth, she says, "I just moved out of the city. I was a dentist hygienist and I worked downtown." I said, "I took that bus downtown every day. I stopped wearing jewelry. Couldn't use my telephone because the guys would just come on and just grab it and run." And she, here I am sitting. It was just a 1 hour visit. And I'm saying, if they're telling me this kind of thing, what are they telling other people? And so it's a quality of life issue, and the statistics bear it out. So Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle, you know, Tim Evans of the courts, and Mr. Dart from the sheriff's department, they are all sitting there on a small block of ice. And right now, spring is coming, and it's thawing, and it's deep water where they are. The only way they're going to get through this thing is to kind of hang together, I think. That's what they're starting to think. To me, the story of that poor little girl that was shot, you know, walking across the street, holding hand in hand with her mother, her guardian, that news conference was in response to that issue. What a terrible issue. And that's the quality of life issue. It's not that the gangs are killing little people because they want to, because they can't shoot straight. So all the innocents are getting killed, and they have to do something, and they're not doing anything. Story in the paper over the weekend about how all the promised new prosecutors that Tim Fox is supposed to bring to the table since the policeman went away, and now he's been released, you know, Laquan McDonald's shooting. And that's not been there. That's not there. So, you know, that piece of legislation that passed in the veto session last year, the safety bill, you know, that was not well debated, not well researched, should be examined in Springfield. There's an opportunity for people to do that in Springfield today.
Well, since media seems to be falling down on the job every day, the Democrats might be able to reconfigure themselves and pretend that they didn't pass no cash bail, you know, then just pretend they didn't do any of that stuff that led to many of these problems. And they'll just paper it over and just say, never mind. And
well, I've been told by guys that that are trying to organize efforts on that particular piece of legislation to save it, and those in opposition to it, that is to be what you just said, John, one of the key issues in the rhetoric of campaigns at every level in this state of Illinois, because it's a quality of life issue in Chicago that's spilling out to the suburbs and spilling out downstate. And the crime issue, if you poll in some of these cities where the crime issue is negligent, I mean, it's not even close to being a problem issue. It's the number one issue because it's the perception of people talking to each other. And in reality, you see and hear it on the news. And there are some publications, you know, that we know about that aren't telling it all. So they have, there's the Patch and the Block Club and the CWB, or is it CWM, right, are talking about the stories that you see. And so people are seeing it pop up on their computers, you know, as they're writing stories or they're writing their loved ones or they're writing emails. All of a sudden you get a pop up and boom, it's in front of your face. The alderman can't control it. They're asking constituents to write postcards to Kim Fox and Tim Evans. Think about that concept. About that concept. No, I mean, I understand that they need to hear pressure, but how many bodies do you need in the morgue before you get their attention?
Yeah.
And children now. It's all children. It's all, you know.
And the polling, I mean, in time, correct us, you know, let me know if there's an update to it, but last major poll in Chicago I saw was that and the number one thing across the board in every demographic was violence and how do we stop the violence in this city? And you wouldn't know it really by, at least by the political discourse, because you have, even at that press conference, or shortly after that press conference, there were interviews where Kim Fox was saying, well, the no cash bail, the no bail system is going to be great because all these guys who are doing the shooting, they're the ones who would only ones who would be denied bail. So everybody else will get out. But these are the ones we'll be able to keep them in forever, is what she's saying. But how many people believe that that's really what's going to happen?
No, you make a very good point there. In reality, those are symptoms of a larger issue of the lack of leadership, but we all throw that term around. I throw it around a lot myself, but I think a good elected public officials are really educators, and they're not there just to stamp papers and sign, you know, contracts for the water department. They're there to do other kinds of things and to push the envelope and kind of teach us that, hey, there's a better way of doing this, whether it's electric cars or, you know, whether it's, you know, schools that, you know, are better schools than we currently have because they're subsidized by either a church or they should be pushing the envelope. You know, we should be debating these issues. It should be a great debate, but now it's a quality of life issue. It's an economic issue. It's an issue that is threatening and strangling Chicago's umbilical cord to its roots. And so the quality of life issue is very serious because you don't get people to come into the city as you did before. Sure, after I die in 25 years, there'll probably be another swing. The pendulum will swing back, might swing back a lot sooner because of the speed of what information moves today. But it's going to take time. So there's a lost generation we have in our current Chicago public schools. We have a lost generation behind it. And now we have 150,000 people that have left this town. And their economic engines. I talked to somebody yesterday who was in Naples, Florida. And she told me, former state representative, she tells me, everybody's in Florida, Tom. I mean, everybody that runs the city, everybody who's been elected, she says, everybody's in Florida. And I said, wow, you know, I mean, everybody at least temporarily has left the city currently, you know, and they're gathered there. That's all the institutional memory, the institutional money, the institutional ability with brains to move power, the Rolodexes that get things done. And so it's going to be a slow trog here, but it's the quality of life issues that threatens everybody. You know, all of these issues that we don't attend to are education and the criminal justice system that we don't attend to is fracturing our very spinal cord. You know what happens when your back goes.
But these are the very good metaphor, Tom, but these are the very issues, are they not, that the Democrats don't want to talk about?
Right. I mean, in Illinois, they certainly don't want to talk about that issue. And people would say that Republicans in Missouri don't want to talk about that issue. But here in the city of Chicago, those are the only issues that people want to hear about.
Right.
So I think that's what forced Kim Fox and Lori Lightfoot to be at that meeting together. and Superintendent Brown. You know, we haven't heard much. I haven't seen much written about it, and I don't know anybody there that could have told me what was really going on behind everything.
Right. But,
you know, to me, what could have been called rapprochement, whatever you want to call it, the visibility is important. The people need confidence in the criminal justice system in the city and the county. They don't have it. It's not there.
I will say that there is one chorus that seems to be coming from all sides, the judges, the prosecutors, the sheriffs, all that. And it's that, well, we need to work together. We really need to come together. And they've been saying that forever. And then when do they come together? When it's, as you say, a good optics, but not to actually accomplish anything. It's just about the optics to them. And that's what, I mean, how do we force them to do, like you said, be leaders? Because there's no leadership anymore in anything. Everyone's too afraid of anyone saying something, or I said the wrong thing, or I did the wrong thing, or I didn't see the right group.
Jeff, what are they afraid? Who are they afraid of?
Well, they're afraid of the quote unquote media, you know, sinking their teeth into something.
What media?
That's what they're afraid of. They're modeling their image so it looks a certain way because they're afraid of what it would look like if they didn't.
I think you both of you guys have a real good point. And, let me just say one thing and then go to the points you just made before I forget this issue. You know what happens when you have a young quarterback and he sits on the bench for 2 or 3 years because he's inexperienced and the guy ahead of him is getting old, a little bit like Aaron Rodgers and the guy Jordan Love up in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years and – it was not performing as well as Jordan Love currently is performing off the bench for the Green Bay Packers. So you never know what you have until you get some seasoning. And so I only say that in regard to Mayor Lightfoot. She's getting some seasoning. And I'm anxious to see how she runs this campaign because reading all her emails and reading and watching the tea leaves and how she moves around, she does have a pretty good heart, but she's so quick to, to pull a knife on someone, you know, and I mean that metaphorically, reading them or the riot act. If she could round out her game a little bit, like Aaron Rodgers did, it took him 5 years, she's early on in her career as a politician. Nobody wants to be a politician to run as a politician, but you have to be a politician to succeed as one. And she needs to learn how to do that. And getting back to the media stories where the media in town has been soft for a long time. Evidenced by what the Irving campaign is doing, today, if you read in the Capital Facts and you read in some of the, I think it was Greg Hines this morning, the Crane Chicago Business, they're out there doing a preempt strike on the Chicago Tribune story that is alleging there's been a partner of his that worked for a defendant that went on to do dastardly things to people. And they went out on a preemptive strike to let everybody know that there's no connection between the two and to call the Tribune out for a story that has yet to be printed. Now, what would have happened in the old days, John Cass, if that had happened to the Chicago Tribune candidate?
In the old days, it wouldn't have happened because the paper that I worked for had editors who would push a story. And they would say, you want to go for Starbucks at 3 o'clock? Get back to your, I could just imagine Bruce Dold, get back to your desk, finish the damn story, and they would get it out. And then we'd see. And columnists and editorial boards, although they say we don't work in concert, definitely would support the brand and we'd see. But this modern media is not even able to do that, nor is it able, and I would ask you both, they talk in terms of personalities, so you have Lightfoot and Fox. They don't talk about Preckwinkle. They never talk about Tony Preckwinkle.
Oh, why is that? She reminds me of George Dunn. in the way he ran the county. You know, he's to me, Ira Kolitz was his consigliere or whoever, however you would refer to Ira Kolitz. And,
yeah.
And if you were good with Ira, you were good with George. And if you were good with George, you were good with the whole circle.
Tom, they were so good together that they, yeah. I think they charged the county $70,000 a piece for, one of those, no, for pumps at the county hospital because they like the girls, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call those things, but whatever, marital aids, surgical marital aids.
Yes. They were in charge of everything. You know, that's one time when my memory does not help me. But George Dunn was he was strong. He was control of everything, and yeah. I haven't seen that. You know, sure. You know, we had a it was John who it was the county board chairman, and then his son was there for a
John Stroger.
Right. John Stroger. He was pretty strong, but he wasn't like George Dunn. I like John Stroger. I thought he was a real gentleman, but he ran the business the way the business had been run as George. George Dunn ran it, but Tony Preckwinkle reminds me of somebody with that kind of political strength and muscle.
And it's unfortunately the media. There's no media now to focus on what Preckwinkle is doing with the sheriff, with the jail, with the judges, with the bonds, with
why
Kim
is that?
Fox. And because she's left uncovered. She's allowed to do all this stuff without any pressure. And I would say that that this must infuriate Lori Lightfoot to no end.
Well, it does because, you know, also they go back to the election, you know,
yeah.
Not being on the same side, obviously. But more importantly, of the four prongs, she controls Lori Lightfoot. The mayor controls the police department.
That's it.
But Preckwinkle controls the courts, the jail. And the state's attorney's office. I mean, nothing can happen in the criminal justice system in Chicago unless, you know, they work together. All Lori has is the police department. Right. Then all the other three organizations have serious issues that they're currently dealing with. Of course, they have to answer to the county board chairperson, Tony Preckwinkle, on their budgets. And that's what the bottom line is money, you know, in politics right here. So I think the more people get wise to that, the more people should understand that. And, you know, what surprises me about the political campaigns is the lack of strategic, you know, if you're driving down the road, you're going to Springfield, you know, you're going to go past Pontiac and Goodell, you're going to spell Odell and you're going to pass, you know, Bloomington, you're going to pass Lincoln. There's certain places, you know, back and forth, you know, where the marks are in a campaign, you have those same kind of marks from the start to the finish. And it doesn't seem like people kind of strategically kind of plan their campaigns out as well as they used to and really try to take advantage of the narratives out there. Everybody seems to be kind of parked in their own little parking lot and everybody likes being right there, but you should always enlarge the context in a campaign and move around, you know, never go where your opponent wants you to be. And, you know, in the Republican governor's race, everybody wants to know who voted for Trump.
Right.
Why go there? Why not tell everybody if you want to know who I voted for in the general election, you tell me and I'll tell you, did you vote for Hillary? I mean, right. Did you vote for Clinton? Or, I mean, it's all about Trump, you know,
but
serious journalists, that's all they're writing about.
We're seeing this now the last few days as the mask mandates begin to collapse, as the judge in Sangamon County ruled them illegal. As the Democrats themselves in every state are tossing away the mask mandates and pretending, just like the Democrats in Chicago, pretending they didn't support, no catch bail in the larger context, national context. It's about, I didn't really support mask mandates. They know that it's coming. They know they're trying to get ahead of the people because the people are upset. And what do we see out of Illinois from the Democratic Party, Pritzker. This is his defense on the mask mandate. Trump, 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 Trump. January 6th, where were you? You know, he's trying to put everybody on the defensive. Does it work, Tom?
Well, it works if you sit there and you play defense. You can't play defense in this kind of environment. You have to always be on the offense. Once you're explaining, you're losing. So, you know, the Democrats desperately need Donald Trump to be somewhat successful and mute some of the Republican success. If you take a look at the generic ballots, you know, between Republicans and Democrats, I think Republicans are up 4%. I think it's 47 to 43, some percentages there. Right. But it's a 4% shift. You know, a year ago, I think it was 10% Democrat. That's usually the foretelling of what the fall looks like right now. And you take a look at the Biden, you know, job approval. CNN had it, you know, at 41%, disapproval of 58%. And then when you ask people of those people that are disappointed in the president, 58%, how many of you can point to something that he did that you're happy with? 56% of the people could not do that. So, and, you know, he's got 36% of the independent vote, which is now the largest block. I think it's close to 50% of the electorate with 25 on each side, but he's only got 36% there. The Democrats, you know, have desperate problems because of the desperate issues that they've been dealing with over the last year. And all the Republicans in Illinois have to do is kind of get on that bandwagon, but they sit there and it reminds me of Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, when he was in Zaire and did the rope-a-dope, you know, with Foreman, right? It was,
right.
And then he came back and won in the end, but they're just sitting there taking punches. And I just don't understand that positioning. It doesn't make any sense, John. So I think the Democrats win as long as they keep talking about Donald Trump. And what they're winning is it means really more than it's just that they're not losing anymore. As long as you can have Trump out there, that January 6th committee is very important because it's going to, you know, unleash many of the results, you know, down the stretch before the general election to try to move people. And they're going to, you know, point out various different legislators around the country that were, liable for criminality or whatever, and try to soften the blow and losing the number of House seats. Remember, at the same time in 2010, Barack Obama had about, I think it was 50-50, 47, 53. He was close there. Yeah. Job approval, disapproval. And the Republicans won 60 seats.
That if we had an editorial department at John Cass News, I would have you guys be on the editorial board, and we'd be asking, say, a generic Democrat.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're beating up Republicans on Trump, and you're trying to drown them in the tub of Trump, let's say. What about you guys and the riots that never stopped and the violence that never stopped, the Black Lives Matter, the violence, the riots, the destruction of the cities, the coercion of corporate America that ran like cowards grasping the knees of Black Lives Matter to donate to them, even while BLM bosses were buying pricey real estate. Don't you think they could go on the offensive a little bit? But I don't think you can do that when mainstream media is so to the left. They won't be heard.
Well, I think you have to get personal. And you have to be, you know, draw a straight line, and then you put people, thereby putting people on the defensive. That poor young woman who was in the South Loop, you know, on Wacker Drive about 2 months ago, that was killed, knifed to death, and that was a direct result of incompetency on our leaders here in the city. And, you know, that poor little gal that was just terrible. So beautiful little gal with the beautiful eyes. It's just heartbreaking. There should be a law. That was in broad daylight. I mean, that was that it's incomprehensible when you, and then when you take a look at the individuals that were responsible, where they came from and how they got to where they are, the direct line to the people that run the city of Chicago and execute the duties of persons that are supposed to be responsible for the people of Chicago. So the people that oversee that organization have to be held personally responsible. You know, one of the things that happens in Springfield all the time is businesses, other people have problems with state government regulations. They sue the state, but everybody in the state is protected from those lawsuits that execute those decisions. Well, there are sometimes, like in the cannabis law early on, where people that sued the state were actually could also be held liable because it was a fallacy in the law. They forgot to include that clause, that whole harmless clause for the. So people that execute their decisions, holding them responsible, I think is a real important piece of it. In government, that rarely ever happens. But in a campaign environment, it's your responsibility as a candidate to show why things happen the way they do and how we can prevent it. And you can't do that without being honest with yourselves.
One of the things that you've done, Tom Serafin, you should know, and those of you who don't, is an excellent, probably one of the top political analysts. You can see him on Fox 32 Chicago occasionally. He does the Crisis Cast with Lisa Dress at
CrisisCast.com.
CrisisCast.com, yeah. And I like it.
Marion Soul, who's really a wonderful voice. She's got her own cast as well.
So what would you, how would you, if you had Tim Evans as a guest on Crisis Cast, because you talk about, you know, leadership and leadership in crisis often on that podcast, how would you, what would you expect them to say besides if you shoot a 16-year-old, if you're a 16-year-old kid and you shoot a baby, you really shouldn't be held responsible because you're not old enough to know right and wrong.
Yeah, that I would ask him that. I would ask him why a juvenile with a weapon gets three chances, but an innocent with nothing doesn't get a single chance, and that's more important. When you can turn around and say there are thousands of people in this city being killed every day for no reason other than that they're not being held accountable for their actions, and tell us that they deserve another chance, and tell us that, like he said the other, what was it, a couple of weeks ago at the Union League Club, that it was, you know, if a kid goes out and commits a crime and he comes back, we let him go. And he comes back and commits another crime, and we let him go. And he comes back and commits another crime. But doesn't he still deserve a chance? That's why I would ask him. Who deserves the chances, the innocents or the criminals?
He said also basically that age of not knowing what right and wrong is not just 16, it's 25. So I guess you might as well just empty half the jail or the prisons, because if you're 25, you don't know what's right and wrong. I doubt that, but that's the belief of the chief judge. And here's another thing, guys, and I'm not fixing the chair because it's squeaking, because Steve the pilot complained and I told him I'm not fixing it then.
Squeaky the chair is now going to have to be a character.
Squeaky the chair. But if you're... Where's the Cook County Republican organization to run campaigns on this? Now, why do we have to put Tom Serafin on the spot? But Tom, where's the Cook County Republican organization? These are issues that are teed up. Are they not?
Yeah, they are teed up, but you have a recruiting issue. You have a population issue, and you have a lack of leadership issue inside that organization. You have people there that are doing their best to run things. But frankly speaking, the wave of Democrats and the way that the maps have been cut, you know, you have spokes that come out as the hub is Chicago, and the spokes come out all the way out to the suburbs of the Democratic influence. And you just don't have many, many Republicans. And the Republicans that you do have that used to have a lot of clout have recently retired or moved on. And that second and third generation is no longer there. That's why it's going to take time to, for people to build, as the president says, build back better. It's going to take a long time. And you talk about Tim Evans. I think I did some contracting work from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when they were doing something and Joel Tiber was running the court system on the cameras, something. And I liked the guy, you know.
Me too.
He talked about the frontal cortex and all that. But you know what? He talked about the 16-year-old, and you talked about everybody under 25. You're both accurate about it. We educated these people anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000 per child per student. And these kids now are spending time in jail or getting caught or in crime because they can't find a job with the Chicago public school education. I see a lot of bad players, you know, on the board here. We were playing Monopoly, but not all these bad players that want it. They all want to do some good, but some of them can't run as fast as the other guy, and some can't do as many lifts. But they all want to do something good. And in this system that we have currently, there is no place to go. I mean, can you imagine if you were a state's attorney? We had state's attorneys in this county for historically over the years that took justice into their own hands. But where is Mr. Hanrahan today? We had people here that didn't do anything. We had a Republican state's attorney. We've had a lot of people that have been in charge of our criminal justice system that has been really an extension of that individual's personality or politics. And they do what they do because it's more of a way of staying alive politically as well as, you know, financially, et cetera. So, in Tim's position running the courts, he's getting what he's getting from the Chicago public school system.
Right.
How does that happen? Oh, out of 350,000 kids, only 75% can read and write at eighth grade level for two or three generations. And why aren't we in Chicago going nuts over this? It's incredibly important to design a school system designed for that particular geography and neighborhood. You don't put a lot of people that speak Polish to teach in Polish in Spanish schools. There's a reason for that. You need people that can speak the language and teach the kids that don't have parents or have one parent or are threatened by gangs. Bobby Rush is a great friend of mine, and I go down to his neighborhood all the time, and there are certain streets where you're saying this is a safe street. And I'm thinking to myself, what of all the poor schmucks that have to live three blocks from here where they're not safe? What are they doing? I mean, everybody's going to move to live around this one street, the safe street to walk. I mean, these are plans that, you know, intelligent people put together to design a city where you have a corridor where it's safe. I mean, this is 2022 and we're doing this, and we're all being polite and going out to dinner in the evening. But this is what's really going on. We don't have people that are really thinking about the reactions and the responses of these young people. They're only doing what they know. Well, they are our product. We have bred these young people to be this, and we have to deal with it in a strong criminal justice system. And we threw away our mental health institutions and the state monies that went along with it. So we're creating a society that's going to rip us apart. We're not doing anything about it. Now it's about all the people that live in Streeterville in the Gold Coast. Now they might be doing something about it, but it's not enough. It's not fast enough.
It's already, yeah. I think it's past the tipping point, gentlemen. I think I don't like saying that, but the way I see media covering or not covering Preckwinkle, the holes in our public discourse, Tom's trying to plug those and fill those and illuminate on them. And I think sometimes Jeff and I do try, but in the most part, that's not being discussed because people don't want to be, you know what? You don't want to be the skunk at the garden party. You don't want, if I say that, then Tony Preckwinkle's people will be upset. So I better not say that. You know, that's not a robust Chicago news town. That's a communist country where you don't say anything, or some Middle East place where you have, strong men and scary dictators. That's not a robust, free town. Everything that Tom Serafin is talking about is important. from the schools to the holding people accountable on all the different levels. I don't see that being discussed anywhere.
No, and it's the shortage is in institutional memory, because if you aren't a student of history, you're doomed to repeat it. And I've used that statement a lot, and even when I was much younger than I am today, and I didn't really comprehend the muscle that it had in inside of the world that we live in. Because now when I look back and I'm saying to myself, we have repeated the same errors over and over and over again. And I wish I could have had a seat in that room. Might not have made a difference, but I could have said, hey, we did this before and it didn't work. Let's try something else. Let's give this a chance. Let's not do this again. Let's not put our head in the sand again. We can't do that. You see some of these same things going on over and over and over again. And you got to have, you know, why get involved in politics, especially after the age of 50, if you don't really want to, you know, make a difference? You know, if you're doing it to get rich, well, you're going to have, you know, a lot of fun probably somewhere in Sing Sing. But you're not going to make a difference. You know, the only reason to get into this business now, today, I think, you know, you got to be serious about it, and you got to be in there to make a difference. Because as John says, you know, we may have passed the point of no return. It's going to be very, very tough. And it's, you know, that's what I like about Lori Lightfoot. You know, yes, she's made some, you know, dumb decisions and gone the wrong way on some issues. But I like the fact that she's still a fighter. And if you could get in the room with her and convince her that this is worth fighting for, you got somebody who'll go into the ring with a 300 pounder. You know, she's not afraid of a 300 pounder in there. So, but, you know, it's just,
how much does Tony Preckwinkle weigh?
Yeah, 300 pounds.
I don't see her. That's the problem. I see her.
Politically speaking.
Yes. Yes. Metaphorically. Thank you. Yeah. I'm talking metaphorically. Yes.
Right. I don't see, I wish it were two women enter, one woman leaves, like Thunderdome with Tony and Lori, you know, because basically the height difference would make an interesting fight if Lori's quicker.
Absolutely.
But I just don't see it, guys.
There's a good argument for Lori. If Lori wants to win this race for re-election, I'm sure she does. In a multiple primary, they're talking about Arnie Duncan. They're talking about even Paul Vallis. You know, I would love to see Paul Vallis on stage in a debate with everybody. No holds barred. Just people talking about issues, about the school system, about the police department. You need somebody up there who's got all that knowledge and institutional understanding. I know Arnie Duncan headed up the schools nationally for 8 years under Barack Obama, and 2 years of veto-proof majorities in the House and the Senate and the White House. And we still have what we have today. So everybody's going to have to be talking about what they know and what their plan looks like. And the voters should not be sitting by saying, we'll wait till we see what we're going to be there, when we're going to do that, when we think we're going to figure out what we're going to be there when we're there. No. No gobbledygook, no double talk, you know, and that's where the media and others come. And hey, listen, Greising from the BGA broke the big story today with Mr. Griffith that he's going to give $20 million this week to the mayor of Aurora. So you have the government association, you know, involved in journalism, and Greising was a columnist for Cranes, I think, and maybe for also the Tribune.
Yes,
but I was surprised. That it didn't come out in the Sun Times or it didn't come out in the Tribune.
Because you have to report.
Yeah, so how does Greising get that story?
Because I guess the Trib and the Sun Times are too busy. You know, they're too busy regurgitating whatever approved talking points there are. Like Trump for, on the Republican side. And this is how you defeat the Republicans, by mentioning Trump. And I don't know, with the Sun Times, you know, they have some really good reporters still, but and as does the Tribune, but I don't know. They're going to be owned by WBEZ and the AFL-CIO. So I don't know how that's going to work out in terms of.
You guys hit on
that. When you lay it out like that, the question answers itself.
Right, well, exactly. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to disparage. I'm just trying to lay it out straight.
No,
am I wrong? Tell me.
No. I love the way you talk. Remember, I said that last time I heard you speak, I said, well, that's John Cass pulling some punches.
Yeah, that's probably why I have no friends except my wife and you two.
I'm Zeus.
I can hear him whining in the background. It's a good point there, but I mean, like, even just the idea that the BGA is focusing and they're trying to dig up the stories and do some positive reporting. But to John's point, the focus isn't there. The focus is on Republicans seemingly only. And so that's why the Democrats running the store have driven it into a terrible situation where we are now, because no one's focusing on them. They're focusing on the low hanging fruit that is the Republicans in the state, unfortunately for them.
Well, there's a state rep called his name is Ryan Spain out of Peoria, young man who is very bright. And if Jim Durkin wasn't the leader there, he'd be, probably the successor, players in the room, the 4A successor. He's running the reelect campaign. And I think this year, the state Democratic Party, if I remember everything I've read, has got a good group of candidates. They've actually solicited it out there. They recruited and they have candidates finally. Last few years, they haven't been able to fill the slate. The state Republican Party, the Illinois. And so Ryan, he's very optimistic in spite of what you hear about everybody and not about everything. Certainly south of I-80, the Republicans are going to do very well. It's going to be very hard for a Democrat to win, south of I-80. And they're going to be competitive in the suburbs. So, the think tank, on the Republican side, these young bright young people are looking to be maybe pick up a dozen seats, which would be huge for them in Springfield.
It would be huge. And also maybe one way, maybe we should all back Pritzker, because if he wins the gubernatorial race, how did we ever come up with that word?
gubernatorial
it kind of reminds me
they are of goobers
like, goober and something else I don't want to mention. But if he wins, how long will it be? He could, maybe that's the way to get rid of Pritzker. Reelect him so he'll run for president and get out of our hair.
Well, there are scenarios that people in the business talk about all the time that it's anticipated, by many around the country that the Republicans will be able to, reclaim the majority in the House of Representatives and have the speaker, Republican speaker. And there is an outside shot, as long as the numbers continue to hold, unfortunately for the Democrats in Washington and the White House, that the Senate could go two or three seats. I didn't think it could go 2 months ago, but now they're talking maybe two or three seats in the majority. And if the Democrats become the minority in the United States Senate, I don't anticipate Senator Dick Durbin filling out the rest of his term being a member of the minority party, which will be, probably for at least 4 years, maybe six, certainly through the next presidency. So he may end up wanting to, retire. The president may appoint him, the ambassador to France, or he may take a seat, in a big cabinet position, and that seat would be open and the governor would be responsible then for appointing that spot. And he could appoint himself. He could appoint anyone.
I have to say that, Tom, in all your years, I know in history and working in politics and races in the state, nothing tickles me more than hearing you describe a scenario or like the numbers, like this outcome. I love that stuff. It's just so much fun for me. So it's always fun to have you on.
There's the possibilities, are endless of what happens, because everybody's up for election this year. Everybody is. There's a very important Supreme Court race up. Not many people are paying attention to either for the Illinois Supreme Court. So, it's going to be one of those years where you have big movements. And in Illinois, where you have, a new map grounded by Democrats, drawn by Democrats, pretty tightly approved by the Supreme Court Democrats, you have a pretty good spot to be in right now with the governor with $300 million in his war chest that he can spend. And it's going to help a lot of locals with some of those dollars. But the Republicans have got themselves the same financial situation. In fact, they have a larger purse now, thanks to Mr. Griffith, and they're going to have a lot more help on the ground. can they go toe-to-toe with J.B. Pritzker? Well, you know, historically, you would say that Republicans have more strategists, and nationally, they have a better idea what they want to do locally. But right now, Pritzker's campaign is taking the Republican Party to the woodshed in the first 2 or 3 weeks of this new candidacy of the mayor of Aurora. And that has to stop if they're going to be successful.
We have to have you back on, Tom, because I can see all these things you're saying. I just don't want to wait till they happen. I want people to watch. And as you walk along the Chicago Way, everybody, you can look at the different trees that are wilting and dying and some that are bearing fruit. And you might want to pick up some low-hanging fruit next time we have Tom Serafin on. Tom, thanks for being here, buddy.
Hey, it was wonderful to be on the Chicago Way with you and Mr. Carlin. I really appreciated the opportunity. Thank you, guys.
Oh, it's an honor, Tom. Thank you.
And don't forget, unfortunately, in certain parts of the city now, the Chicago Way is watching your back. So
there's no mirrors on the Chicago Way because they've all been broken. So you basically have to keep turning your neck around.
Yeah.
Stay frosty.
Peace.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
There's just nobody better as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And he's proud of that H. I love it.
What? H.
H, as in Hector, the TH. Like, so many of the guys are like abbreviating the Tom. They're like, nah, throw the H in. Like, the Scottish G-E-O-F-F of like right, Jeff. Right. Okay.
Like Jeff Caldwell.
Exactly.
Of the Joplin Globe, Tom Serafin, Tom. Well, that's because, you know, I just like it. Yeah. And too bad we don't have audio or video, because then the reader listeners could have seen Tom's new haircut.
Yes, the sans ponytail. That thing was legendary.
It was getting legendary. He knows you change up before everyone expects you to, you know.
There you go.
You keep changing. That's how you survive. And there's nobody better as an analyst in politics than this guy. He hits the nail exactly. It's about culture and it's about the feeling of safety.
Yeah.
He knows exactly.
And make it personal, and it's about that part. And you know, the thing about Lori too, he did talk about, we've talked about this and told her this too, that the institutional knowledge, the idea that she needed to have more seasoning before she's on the main stage. Yeah, he's really good at that stuff. And I also have to say two things, John. We asked for positive moments from Joe Biden's term in office so far. I would say I can't jump to the top of my mind, so I would be in the poll to have something there. And it was, he adopted a dog and he adopted a cat. Those were two good things. No?
Yeah, I am so good. I'm so glad.
That's all I can come up with.
No, I'm so glad that you're going along with all these other, you know, Trumbalone journalists. The cat, the dog.
Those are the only two things I can come up with. So
that, oh, yeah, really, and he's
bode well for him.
And he's bumbling us into war, and right, inflation is destroying.
That's more economy. My point, John, that I have two things. They're just not very good.
You know, I thought you were going to say, Jeff Carlin, one of the positive things was Chris Chelios' child playing for China, although there's, you know, Chris's
irony.
Wife is not Chinese, so I don't understand that.
Right.
But yeah. I guess we'll have to leave it for our Blackhawk episode.
You and I were talking about this before off air, but it's just, one, it happens a ton. I think it's crazy that like anyone would do that to begin with. I don't even understand the Olympics, but the Olympics are such a sham as they are. I mean, how many Olympics have gone by and then we find out, oh, so-and-so is paying so-and-so for this, or some country had to bribe this person so they could get the Olympics in their city, or this entire country was doping all of these teenagers. Or
that's why we have to go back to the original Olympic sports in Olympia every 4 years, and everybody is naked when they run. I don't know how that's going to feel if you're doing a 220, you know, sprinting naked, because there could be things bouncing that you don't like for men and women.
Sure. But, that's
the only way.
Exactly, John. That's my point. People want me to get all upset about Chris Chelios' son playing for the Chinese Olympic team. And then coming back. He's making the dollars. They're paying him for it. He's getting the opportunity.
Wait a minute. Okay. Please don't cut this out because I've got a lot of friends who love Chris Chelios and they're upset that his kid's playing for China because China does not allow dual citizens, except apparently when your name is Chelios or if you're on their Olympic team, then they,
it's kind of
a scam.
It's all a scam. That's my point. And yeah, if Chris Chelios' son was here and I'd ask him, really, like China, that's what you decided to do, thought was your best idea, was to go and play for a country that is less than reputable and in his history.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what your best choice was, sir. I think you're a terrible judgment. But yeah, absolutely. But
right, now you're sounding like me doing that, that column on what do we talk about when we talk about sports. And I don't want to get into sports right now.
Right.
Because my heart is still full this week with Valentine's, and
yeah,
that's how it's going to stay because I did the Eddie Haskell thing and wrote a Valentine for Betty. And okay, let's just leave it there.
All right,
for Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates, co-host of the Crisis Cast podcast and analyst on My Fox Chicago, the best in the business. And for Jeff Carlin, co-host here on the Chicago Way, executive producer at WGN Radio, master of pies, lover of cats, including the presidential cat. Don't even start me. And me, John Cass, husband, father, married to Betty. Probably my greatest accomplishment was that I was hit by her thunderbolts and stayed married to her. Thanks for joining us. And join us again, won't you, on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.